Deer Trucking Awesome. What do you think of when someone says tough? Honestly, I think of a Toyota truck. Tundra's one mean mother of a truck with a twin-turbo V6, an incredible going power, and the Tacoma claws through terrain with a taller suspension and lots of creature comforts in the cockpit. Both Toyota trucks are decked out with tons of cool features and tech you'll dig. Check them out at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you live in the South Metro area and have been looking for top-notch customer service, extensive beer, wine, and spirit selections, and unbeatable prices, look no further than Davidson's Beer, Wine, and Spirits. You won't find a more varied inventory anywhere else. Don't just take it from me, guys. This is Michael, and he's been shopping at Davidson's since they opened.
The thing I like about Davidson's versus the competitor is it has a larger selection. And if I am going to buy spirit, then Davidson's is usually my first choice as well because just of the size of the selection. I also like the extensive selection of some hard-to-find items.
But that's not all. Every department is staffed with highly trained specialists who can help you find exactly what you're looking for.
I've always found the folks that you chat with to be knowledgeable. I've chatted with the spirits staff about different bourbons and different vodkas, and I am always chatting with the wine staff about different things and saying, I like this. What else do you have that's similar? Particularly when I go to non-U.S. Wines, I find them extremely helpful in helping me find something I'm looking for.
What are you waiting for? Head to either of their locations in Centennial or Highlands Ranch and follow them on Facebook to stay up to date on their latest specials.
And this ball in the air, deep right center field.
Two-run home run, Trevor Story.
Way back, Myers, he'll watch it go out. Chuck Nasty.
Two-run home run, David Dahl.
Nolan drives this high in the air, deep left field. Take a good look. You won't see it for long.
I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast presented today by the Blake Street Tavern, where we are right now. I'm currently sitting here with Manny Randhawa of MLB.com and StatCast and our good friend Jake Story from John Boy. Have you changed it? John Boy and Jake Productions?
John Boy Media is the umbrella, and then everything else falls under there. Talking Yanks, talking baseball. All sorts of podcasts and different stuff.
You know him as our resident Yankees, Rockies expert.
I might be the if you know John Boy, I'm the other guy. I'll take that all day.
I love that, right? John Boy in the news these days, but yeah. we'll talk
yeah,
about that
we'll
a little
there,
bit
I'm sure.
A little bit later. We do want to focus today on Manny's book, The Blake Street Bombers. I think perfectly titled. I know exactly what it's about. I grew up in the Colorado area. The two of you did not, and I think it'll just be interesting to have a conversation about this memorable group of players from the Rockies' burgeoning years,
absolutely,
as it were. And so the book comes out on Monday,
yes,
right, as we're talking about this. It's going to be available
Amazon.com. So go to Amazon.com and just type Blake Street Bombers. It'll be the first result you see. Can't miss it. and it'll be available in on any device that you can imagine, and also on by paperback, and they'll do what Amazon does, which is they'll send it to you.
So. And then we're going to plan on doing at least one signing party. Have you guys come out here, either Blake Street Tavern or one of our other favorite sponsors around here, but we're going to plan on doing some fun event stuff for you guys around Manny's book. We're going to be very excited. I'll probably be writing a review of it for everybody at some point. That'll be fun. But I actually want to begin this conversation away from Larry Walker, because
okay. we'd get bogged down, I think, if we started.
And we've just, you had an event a couple of weeks ago, I think, now at this point. We talked about that on the podcast. We wrote about it. Everyone listening to this knows the case for Larry Walker.
Yes.
And I think at this point it's just about getting the word out and trying to convince as many people as possible. So I really want to take a step back and focus on them as a group and hear from both of you. I'll ask it this broadly. What is the legacy of the Blake Street Bombers? Because I think some people hear that and they think of this joke time of Colorado pre-humidor baseball,
right,
where the numbers didn't count. Anybody could become a star, even Dante Bichette.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I wrote this toward the end of the book. The ones through the wall first are always the ones that get bloodied, right? And we still see it today with the Rockies, with Rockies hitters being slighted because of their home ballpark, and nobody taking into account the fact that when they go on the road, you know, as Dante said, and this is in the book, he said, you know, we see a curveball for the first time, a breaking ball for the first time in 2 weeks. And then by the time we get accustomed, we're back home. It's not a coincidence that virtually every Rockies team has hit poorly on the road in the 27 seasons of its history. I think I took 800 seasons, team seasons. So basically, from 93 to now, there have been 800 team seasons. So okay, every team multiplied by 27 years. 27 seasons. And out of those 800, I think 18 of the 27 Rockies years in that group are in the bottom 25% on the road. So
they're
it's
just
not
bad
personnel
at hitting on the road. They're the worst road hitting team of all time.
We'll say that. We'll say
one
that.
Through their entire history of their organization.
In terms of consistently bad, yes. No. I would say they're the worst.
And so it's often been stated that either one of two things is true there, right?
Exactly.
Either they just legitimately have bad hitters and always have.
Right.
Or something's going on.
And which one do you believe? Do you believe that they've had Todd Helton and Matt Holliday, and now they have Arenado and Story, and they've had great players throughout, great hitters throughout their history, and yet you're telling me that all of these teams annually fail on the road, basically. So anyway, the legacy of the Blake Street Bombers is it's multifaceted, but one of the legacies is they went through that wall first. They dealt with it first. They were pre-humidor. Dante, there was one time where Dante had hit, I think at the All-Star break in 95, when he, you know, a lot of people think he should have been the MVP that year. Barry Larkin was awarded the MVP. He had 13 home runs at the break, and none of them were on the road. And so obviously, you know, everyone started pouncing on him, and he said, here are the kinds of insights that you'll get in this book. He said that Don Baylor wanted him to talk to a sports psychiatrist because of, I don't know if it was more about the media scrutiny or if it was more about, you know, not hitting on the road or whatever. But then 2 weeks later, after the All-Star break, he had three homers in like 5 days on the road. You know, so it's not that these guys are not capable. It's there is an external. There's an external factor here, and that is that when you go on the road and you come down from altitude, not only are you seeing different breaks on pitches, you're probably being pitched differently because they're laying off. They're going to see more fastballs at home because the breaking balls are flat, and you're going to see more breaking pitches on the road. So you go on the road, what happens? You're going to be maybe swinging a little bit too much, maybe a little bit anxious and tight because you're missing everything that's a breaking pitch. So that's part of the legacy. The other part of the legacy is, and this is huge, they were the first stars, major league stars in Colorado. We had so many guys pass through here, you know, in the minors for decades. Excuse me. Tim Raines, Barry Larkin, we just talked about him. Earl Weaver, You know, I mean, there's lots.
There's an interesting
Tony La Russa. Yeah, you know, lots of people. Terry Francona. A lot of people came through Denver through the minor leagues here, but they, you know, they come here, they play baseball, then they move on. These were the first major league stars. The Marlins didn't have that. The Marlins had so much turnover so fast. Gary Sheffield and Jeff Conine were the only guys from the 93 inaugural lineup that were there in 96. So if you think about it, the Rockies had this group, this cool five-slugger group, the Bombers, and they had this cool name. That's the other thing about the book is you'll see where the name came from, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, and we're going to clear that up. And it's a cool story. So that's just part of their legacy, scratching the surface, but I think those are the two main things. Yeah.
Jake, for you, coming at it from a different perspective, obviously, what do you remember when you think about that group of guys?
Well, for me, it's obviously it's a different time period. I've mentioned it on the podcast before. This might be some people seeing me for the first time. I'm 30 going on 15.
Wow. So yeah, right. Yeah.
I hit the 3-0, but I mean, you know, back then I'm obviously a kid, and we made some Derek Jeter jokes before this, and obviously that's part of my baseball.
We got that out of the way, or so we think.
They pinned me for a little bit, and now it's good. I don't know, man. You remember the Colorado Rockies, and what I was going to ask you when you started talking there was, did everyone just assume, like, altitude out of the gate? Like, that's what I don't understand.
That's a good question.
When the Rockies, when they started, was it before the season, like, were there articles that the altitude, like, watch out for these guys? Like, was that initially everyone assumed that was going to happen, or did they start hitting a little bit, and then people were like, hey, it's the altitude. Or like, yeah. I don't know what assumptions were going on.
Chicken and the egg issue, right? I think it's the latter. There was a lot of minor league baseball here, but you wouldn't find all that much about the altitude, because in the minor leagues, it's like, who cares? You know, minor leagues are there for you to tune up. And actually,
you've seen a baseball game in Reno.
You should care. You know, you should care, because these guys are being affected.
Right.
You know, when they go to the big leagues, because they were pitching altitude, there's the whole mental aspect of it, everything else. But compared with, you know, having a major league team here where there's going to be a lot more scrutiny, after that first year, it was enough. It's like, oh my goodness, look at all the run scoring here. This is ridiculous. And I mean, we weren't even in Coors yet. It was Mile High. Mile High would have been the refrain if they hadn't had Coors. It was just Mile High, Mile High, Mile High.
Second baseman opens up the thing by hitting a home run. You're like,
He pops the ball up and it goes over the fence. Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah. So I think it's just out of experience, the country figuring out that, Denver is a place where there's going to be a lot of offense, and then as the years progressed, it just got solidified in people's minds. I think that's what happened.
And the thing I'll use to kind of win you guys over, and it's something that I think 12 months ago or 10 months ago, the first time I talked to Drew, is something I was super skeptical of, and now I pretty much firmly believe in it, is the Coors effect, that when you go on the road, the breaking balls. I kind of didn't buy into that, because in my head, it was also like, wouldn't the Rockies pitchers be that much better on the road? There was kind of a mental hurdle there for me. Mm-hmm. And then I got to enjoy the spoils of DJ LeMahieu this season.
Yes, you did. That changed a lot of my life.
Was delightful. And yeah, I'm gonna pump that card as much as I can during this.
Right.
Because he's obviously such a talented player. His hit tool is, you know, top tier in Major League Baseball. And I guess that's something that I'm interested in the book, is how hard did you attack that? Because I think if you win people over there, that's when you start getting the real Larry Walker argument, where it's like, if you get over that mental hurdle where you don't picture Coors Field being the second baseman hitting the home run in the first game, you know, was that Mile High or Coors?
That was Mile High.
Okay.
Eric Young.
But senior.
We'll make it simple for you. Eric Young, Mile High, Dante Bichette, Coors.
Okay, got it. That's okay. I've got those now. But I think that's the biggest hurdle. Everyone's going to picture Coors Field as the hitter's park, and Mike Hampton got torched, and I think everyone's got that mental image. So once you kind of put that together, and you do see the numbers, and you see someone like Charlie Blackmon splits, and you're like, this doesn't make sense.
Right.
Baseball doesn't work like that.
Surely he's a better hitter.
You can't be one guy in this building and that guy in another building.
When you actually can.
And so
that's a great point. And there's a section, and we were just talking about this, there's a section in the book that's entitled Coors. Just Coors, because that's the refrain. And we go into that. And, you know, I talked to all these guys, each one of these guys, about what they thought about it. and how they looked at it. I'll just give you one. Vinny Castilla said, you know, at first I never even thought about it. Vinny Castilla grew up in Oaxaca, Mexico. That's 6,500 feet above sea level. Played in Mexico City in the Mexican League. You know, altitude was something that he always played with. And he comes over here, and yes, the first few years here, 93, 94, 95, he had some really, really big splits. But then as you go on, he got up over 800 OPS on the road, and he kept getting better. And I think Vinny, part of it for Vinny is he doesn't care. He really doesn't care. Like he said, you know, they've been talking about it for 25 years. They're going to talk about it for another 25 years. At first, I started getting bothered by it because they were not giving us credit. But I'm like, why should it bother me? I'm going to play baseball. So they all had their ways of dealing with it. Larry Walker's way of dealing with it was 1172 OPS on the road in 97 with 29 of his 49 home runs on the road.
And when on our Talking Baseball podcast, for any OPS that starts with a one, we go one dot.
One dot, that's right.
That's what it is, man.
One dot.
Anytime you're over that,
absolutely,
you're MVP level.
And that's
on the
thing.
And this was him. This was Walker dealing with the
negative Coors effect of going on the road. So I asked him for the book. I said, okay, you're hitting 398 at the All-Star break. You have 25 home runs. Your numbers are the same on the road as at home, so it's not even a fluke type thing at all. And I said, what are you thinking when you are on July 19th? You're at 402. What are you thinking about hitting that? In doing this is insane. He said, I believed him. You know, some people can say this, and you're like, yeah, right. I believe him. He said, I just go up there and I think I'm either going to fail or I'm going to succeed. That's it. I don't make anything more of it than that. And I honestly think, you know, once you sit down with them and talk with them for a while, you see that personality come out. You're like, yeah, maybe that's what he did. He just went up there like a machine and just like, what? It's one or the other. And, you know, he had one of the all-time great seasons. Well, I'll say one of the greatest seasons in recent memory. There have only been six players who have had 9.8 WAR, baseball reference WAR, in a season since him in 1997. And before him, only 23 in history. So there have been 30 guys, including Larry Walker, who have ever done that. So that tells you how good he was.
He did win MVP on a last-place team.
And, you know, he won MVP because he knocked the door down.
Right.
You know,
it was have to vote for
Dante
that
didn't
season.
Get it the year in his year. Ellis didn't get it in his year in 96. And
Todd Helton would go on to not get
Todd Helton would go on to not get it. Larry Walker's season.
That's stupid.
That's a phrase Jeff Kent. Todd Helton would go on to not get it.
Jeff Kent was not the MVP in 2000.
That was the dumbest MVP of all time.
But so Larry Walker is the only MVP because you would be embarrassed not to vote for him even with the Coors thing, because of how ridiculous he was on the road. You could tell all that without advanced stats because people weren't looking at that.
Jake, how much do you know about the? Because I think everybody kind of knows Walker, and then Galarraga and Castilla made their way around the league a little bit more, so I think more people know about them. I think both Manny and I have become especially attached to Dante Bichette and Ellis Burks because I think they are the ones who maybe most fell victim to this notion that they were Coors products.
Right.
And I'm just curious how much you know. Bichette was maybe the more famous one, but Ellis Burks in particular. Do you think back and go, man, that guy was good, or do you have to double check the number? I'll admit, I had to double check the numbers that you pointed
to. I'm not going to come in with Ellis Burke stats. I kind of wish I did now, so I'd be like, you like this? I kind of know what I'm talking about. No, I mean, the image in my head is kind of the older, lumbering Ellis Burks a little bit, kind of like Cleveland Indians. He started, and then he kind of went into some DH days. So I don't have the image of young Ellis Burks and what that looked like, but I know by the time I was watching TV and inundated with baseball whenever I saw him, the way people talked about Ellis Burks, I was like, this guy's a baseball player.
Right.
So I don't have the good image of Ellis Burks, the Rockies. Didn't he used to play a little center field, too?
Ellis Burks Ellis Burks was the next Willie Mays for the Red Sox. That's what they thought of him. He had every tool. He was wiry strong. He could run. He could throw. He could hit. He could hit for big power. Big power. And, you know, they bring him up, and, you know, he just starts getting hurt. He was a 2020 guy. Boston, that generation of fans in Boston had never seen the 2020 guy virtually. Yastrzemski did it once, you know. It's like they were a station-to-station team, and it's moved the line. And Ellis Burks comes in here, goes 20 home runs, 27 steals or whatever, and 15 outfield assists. He was Mookie. People still send him letters saying, Mookie Betts reminds me of you so much when you came up. And the injuries, the tragedy in his career is so many injuries. I mean, you could have one of those, like, you remember that, I don't know if you guys ever saw the Mickey Mantle, you know, big Mickey Mantle page where he's on crutches and he's like got a grimace on his face and they got pointing to every little malady that he's ever had. You could do that with Ellis Burks. Ellis Burks, here's what can tell you a lot about Ellis Burks. He went to the Giants after he was here. He was traded to the Giants in 98, midseason. Good story about that when Curtis Goodwin came out to center field to tell him he was traded. I'll leave it at that. It's a really good story. But yeah, he comes off the field in the middle of the game at Wrigley Field. They tell him he's traded to the Giants. He goes there, and he for two straight years he had 96 runs batted in. RBIs are not an all encompassing stat. But the fact they can show you something when it's a situation like this.
I don't like when people when you have
400 or fewer at bats and you have 100 RBIs.
That's
never happened in the National League, at least until that point. I don't know if it has since.
No matter where you're hitting in what lineup, that's ridiculous.
He had 96 in less than 400 bats in 1999 and 2000 for the Giants. And so if you think about it, this guy and his WAR, and he only played in like 125 games. His WAR was only behind Kenton Bonds.
Put up a 4.4 WAR that year. He hit .344 on base, .419.
How many games did he play?
Slugged .606. He played in
122 games. He missed 40 games, yeah. And he produced a 4.5 WAR.
Yeah.
This guy was incredible. You know, and talking to him, it's very hard to kind of keep bringing it up because it's like that's a big part of this book, and you got to keep bringing it up. You could have been. You know, he's great about it, but it's still like one of those things where this guy, Larry Walker, not for the injuries. He's an all-time great already. Not for the injuries. We're talking one of the greatest, I mean, like inner circle Hall of Famers. Ellis Burks was going to be that guy if he hadn't missed, you know, half his career, you know, due to injury.
44.7 FWAR over a injury-riddled career.
Yes.
A career 125 WRC+. Mm-hmm. That year in 96 when he was in MVP contention, hit .344 on base, .408, slugged .639 with 40 home runs and 32 stolen bases, while also being seen as a plus defender in center field, which I've never seen Fangraphs rate a plus defender in
amazing.
Center field for the Colorado Rockies.
The other thing, like, too, is that you consider the Nolan Arenado
7.2 WAR season.
Nolan Arenado's career high in WRC plus.
It's like 132.
It's like 132.
Yeah.
Ellis was 151 that
151.
Year. Larry was 178 in 97.
Right.
We are talking about those were the two best Rocky seasons of all time. Yep. That's what they were. So that's the thing. The Blake Street Bombers are kind of, I mean, they're remembered here, they're beloved here, but as far as the wider world of baseball, I don't think people really look back and say, and really know all that much about them. And, you know, this whole project came about because I was doing something else with Dante, the Saber book chapter, and at the end, it's fun talking to him because he's a baseball geek. He loves talking about it. He taught Bo everything he knows. So obviously now we're seeing that on display.
You know some stuff.
Yeah. And so, I said,
it's going to be fun in a couple of years inside that division. Just look, it's the 90s all over again.
Right.
You guys going to have to be dealing with that.
The baby Jays, the baby boomer, or baby bombers over there.
yeah.
Baby
yeah.
boomers, I was about to say. But that's not the...
That's a whole other
thing. We have to go back to the Vegeters.
Okay.
You know, Dante, I asked him, like, I haven't seen a Blake Street Bombers book. Are you kidding me? Why haven't I seen one of those? And there has to be one. And I looked and couldn't find one. I asked him if anybody had approached him. He's like, nobody has. I'm like, this needs to be rectified.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot. And I think that their story needed to be told, not just those Blake Street Bombers years. We go back to childhood. We go back to Dante watching Reggie Jackson hit a home run in Game 7 and asking his mom, what is that?
Yeah.
It was actually in the
80s. What is that?
Oh, what is going on and why? All he could remember was they had to all wait for him to run the bases and watch him. And he said, what is that? And he's like, she's like, they're baseball players. They get paid to do that. And he said, they get paid to do that? He's 9 years old.
Money?
And he's like, I fell in love with home runs. That was my thing from then on. So it starts in their childhood, each one, and it goes all the way to what they're doing now. So it's a comprehensive thing. And so it's been fun to write, and hopefully it'll be a lot of fun to read, too.
missed his era, man. Should have been, he could have been hitting home runs out there right now. Right. He's going to get to watch Bo do it.
He would have hit 50 home runs here.
So you talked to everyone but Galarraga for the book, is that right? Did you end up getting a chance? The rest of the guys.
I got all the other four guys. Talked to a lot of other people who were, you know, ancillary to this whole thing. 95 NLD. 95 is the longest chapter for obvious reasons because the Blake Street Bombers were born in 95. They reached the postseason in the third year of
existence.
People
forget that happened. Yeah, I sometimes forget they went to the postseason in the 90s. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it remains the fastest any expansion team has ever reached the postseason in the third year. And you know what? And this will be very evident in the book, and that's why I talked to John Smoltz. I talked to some other people about this, about how close the Rockies were to go into the NLCS that year, because they were ahead here late, blew it late. Ahead in the ninth inning in game two here, blew it late. Won game three at Atlanta, and then lost game four. Think about it. They could have won that series two games.
See, the bullpen has always been a problem.
Well, that bullpen was really good in the season.
I know. They were incredible. Yeah. They were the reason they got there.
They were just tired, I think. I mean, part of it is the 144-game season. They were able to stay a little more fresh, and they were good. And they, you know, the starters got hit hard. They would hold the line, and it's Coors Field, pre-humidor. Yeah, I mean, these guys knew they were going to come back. They had a lot of comeback victories. And when they got to the postseason, played the Braves, John Smoltz said, "We were really, really worried." Like, it was, you can go back and watch those games. I think on the MLB channel, they have the game one of that series, NLDS. And you can watch Bobby Cox, and just kind of when they pan over to him, just look at his face, you know, and look at how you know, he always gets animated. I think he still has the record for ejections, right? But he got, I mean, really, really animated, and even kind of like furrowing the brow, like a concern that this call went the wrong way because it could cost us. And you know, they were right there. They were right there, and that's a big part of this book too. Is
getting in the way of like a dynasty.
They would have played the Reds. The Braves went on to sweep the Reds, right? The Rockies, if they beat the Braves and they have a couple of home games here, you got to believe that they would have given the Reds a decent series, if nothing else. We've seen crazier things in baseball than that sort of team and what they did that year reached the World Series. And imagine if they did that in their third year. You know, imagine what would have happened with this franchise going forward. You would probably not have a situation where 3/5 of them are gone by 99 when Dan O'Dowd comes in here. And, you know, Dan, he was all about young and athletic, and Jeff Cirillo was the answer, you know, to everything. And
I remember.
That didn't work out.
No. I did copy his batting stance in Little League.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Thanks, Dan O'Dowd.
Did you see him in the press box earlier when he's a scout now? Did you see him?
No.
You should have gone up and told him that.
Oh, yeah.
He might be back. But anyways, you know, this is a... You know, Dante was traded for guys who either played 1 year with the Rockies or got traded or signed elsewhere or retired. They got virtually nothing back for him. They got virtually nothing for Vinny Castilla. And Vinny Castilla hit 35 home runs when he came back here in 2003.
So,
there's a lot to this story. And that's why it's a 350-ish page book. So it's going to, you know, it gets into everything. You know, stats are going to be a big part of it for obvious reasons. The last chapter is Walker for Hall of Fame and why. But everything else is stories about, you know, Ellis Burks charging Nolan Ryan, you know, and stuff like that. Really good stuff.
I've got a question about 95.
Yes.
Because when you mention the 90s Braves, that's kind of that's the National League team of the 90s. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. When that 95 Rockies team, third year expansion, Blake Street Bombers, were they kind of like... Were they playing with house money? Did they feel like they belong? Like, when those guys talk about that team, is it like, we didn't care who was on the mound? Or was it like, hey, let's swing the sticks because we might as well? Or I don't know. I guess
That's good. I think that they were somewhere in the middle, but more toward the latter attitude that you mentioned, which is, you know, when they went into the season, to a man, they all said, we weren't expecting postseason run. So when you get to that point where they were leading the Dodgers by like six games at the break that year, they were actually, you know, they only finished, I think, two games back of the Dodgers, you know, to win a, and, And we know what happened after that. Still haven't won a division title, you know, in their history. But I think they were playing, felt like they were playing a little bit with house money. But I also think that once they got, after going down 2-0, that hurt. That really hurt them. Because had they gone up, even split one, and then you win one in Atlanta, that game that Smoltz started, Castillo homered off of them, Eric Young homered off of them. I mean, it was happening. Let's say you go up 2-1 and you got two shots to close out the Braves. Dante hit a 3-run shot off Mattis the next day. So, like, I mean, that's a great story, too.
Yeah, the pressure would be fully on Atlanta.
On Atlanta, because, and that's the other thing Smoltz said, that people don't get just how much pressure there was. It was excessive because we were going to be the Buffalo Bills of the 90s, of baseball, right? Because we had already lost so many two World Series and then lost to the Phillies in 93. So it was definitely it was a really interesting time.
For you young kids, it's like what the Dodgers are doing.
for you young people. It's a really interesting thing. I got to go, but hey, thank you for having me, guys. It's great to have you. Too.
Manny, thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to wrap up this episode of the podcast right now. So thanks for that again. You can find his book, The Blake Street Bombers, on Amazon, all that other place. Stay tuned for when we're going to be doing book signings and gatherings and events. Sure. Y'all can come out, meet Manny, meet me if you want, I guess, whatever. Get a book, get it signed.
He's a far more interesting guy.
It's going to be a whole lot of fun. So thanks. Like I said, we're going to wrap up this episode for now. I do think we're going to come back and do another one with our guy Jake here in a minute. For those of you live, be back around for that if you would like to. If you don't, well, then don't. Do what you want.
Live your life.
That's exactly right. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you check out our friends at Blake Street Tavern. You order some Breckenridge Brew when you come down here. You're following us on all the social media stuff. And that you just continue to be absolutely awesome and enjoy your baseball out there. We'll continue to be Manny Randhawa, Jake Story, and Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, we will see you at the ballpark.
Hey guys, I was just sitting here talking to Lindsay about Total Bev's new app. It's incredible. You can shop 5,000 different wines, 2,000 beers, 3,500 spirits, anytime, anywhere. Better yet, you can have Total Beverage shop for you and pick it up inside, prepaid and waiting for you.
Wait a second, that is so cool. So can I still get it delivered if I use the app?
Absolutely. I know you guys have heard of their delivery service. Total Beverage will deliver to your house within 90 minutes or less. We can even save you $10 on a purchase of $50. Use promo code TOTALLY10 at checkout.
What's also amazing, BSN fam, if you can't find an item you want, Total Bev will give you suggestions of similar items on the shelf. Or you can request a special item right from your phone.
It really doesn't get much better than that. Remember, use promo code TOTALLY10 at checkout to save. That's TOTALLY10.